What a week in Cleveland, Ohio, huh? I'm talking about VBC, of course. And, you know, it is, I got to tell you, our vacation Bible camp is a blast. It really is. And Mark Walls and I got to have little bit parts in the drama. We were, the story I told you last week was about Harrow, who was holding all the kids hostage to make hair gel for him, and a la Pharaoh, right? And so Mark and I were Barber 1 and Barber 2. So we attended to Harrow's needs all week. And at the end of the week, after the closing and all that, everybody who's in the drama gets to go outside, and the kids come up to us and have us sign their shirts, like autograph their shirts. Oh my gosh, it's like the best 10 minutes of my life right there. It was so great. It's just really fun. You got to come. If you are not part of it, first of all, be part of it, because it's just a blessing of a week to be part of. And if you can't come and serve, just stop by when we have Vacation Bible Camp. It is really, really terrific week. My name is Mark Lyle, by the way. Many of you know me because this is your home church, but some of you don't because you're visiting or a guest, and that's an absolute thrill to us as a staff team that you would think to come and check things out here. So thanks for doing that. I tend to think in analogies. Analogies help me a lot. Word pictures and comparisons, that helps me learn and makes life make sense to me. And one of the things, when I think about all of you and this time on Sunday morning, I think about my experience at the YMCA. I like to go to the YMCA and work out. There's one close to my house. I do it probably much more for mental sanity than physical good, but there are at least two types of people at the YMCA. One is the people who've been there and they actually come in and get coaches, and it's really cool to watch because they push themselves as hard as they can, and if you watch their interaction with their coach, that coach is at times yelling at them. If you didn't know the relationship, you as an outsider would look at that relationship and say, that's just mean. You know, that person is just being mean to them. But what they're doing is they really know them, they know their capability, and they're just challenging them. And some of those same employees that are coaches are also the people who take new guests around to show them through the YMCA. And when they walk around, they're the nicest people in the world. They're taking care of every need of this person. They're answering every question. They're just incredibly nice. And it struck me, we have both of those type of people here. And your job is to figure out which kind of person you are, where you are in your faith. For some of you, you grew up hating church. And you thought, last thing in the world I'll ever do is I'll go to a church. But here you find yourself, and you feel like, boy, the coffee better be good, the snacks better be reasonably priced, my seat better be available all the time, and any inconvenience, and you go, man, I might just take off. And some of you are going, Mark, you're not pushing me hard enough. I need to be challenged even more. Today, through some of what we're going to do, through our knowing the story and going through some of the high points of the Old Testament, even then, I'm going to try to bring out some things that those of you who really need to be challenged and encouraged, I hope I do that. My hope for those of you who are new or don't yet belong here is that you'll find this a place where you can go, yeah, you know what, maybe I need to get there. Maybe I need to get in better spiritual condition, spiritual shape. Maybe I need to consider more seriously the spiritual aspect of me and grow in that relationship. That's what we hope for. That's our biggest desire for you. when Believe Land first came out. I think it was early in the spring. One of my good friends called me and said, come on over, I want you to watch, we're going to watch Believe Land, it's debuting tonight. And I said, Randy, how can you watch that? We've lived that. I said, you really want to rewatch all of the agony that is Cleveland sports? And he said, yeah. So I went over and I was in and out. I couldn't watch some of it because it was literally too, like, traumatic pain syndrome or something. I don't know. And so we watch it all the way through, and it ends with, gosh, yeah, Cleveland just can't quite make it over the hill. They get close and close and close. And my wife, Anna, is not a huge, huge sports fan, but she's been swept up in everything that happened. And so later this week, she said, hey, Mark, I've never seen Believe Land. She said, why don't we watch that tonight? And so this week, when I watched it, I smiled all the way through it. Because everything bad that happened simply made me realize and remember how great the accomplishment was of the championship. And I realized the strong spiritual overture to that, that God has designed us, God has put us in a life where we will suffer difficulties, where we will have pain, where we will have sorrow, but he has also shown us the championship. He has also shown us the completion, the hope that we have in Christ. And what it does is, if we can understand the right perspective, it redefines and actually begins to redeem all of those things that were hard and agonizing and negative. And we've seen that happen already through the stories of the Old Testament. We saw it happen in the life of Joseph. We see it even in the life of David. Today we will be in 1 Samuel chapter 18. What we've seen so far of David, what we've chosen to look at, is that David was picked out by God, that God had decided that he would allow Israel to have a king, but God had in mind exactly the kind of king he wanted, and in fact, the kind of king he would cause to reign over Israel ultimately in Jesus Christ. Right? The king who will reign forever. But Saul, in fact, was the first king of Israel. And what we see in chapters 18 and on of 1 Samuel is actually the unraveling of Saul's life and his kingship. So David is chosen out, and God says, what I look on is the heart, not the outward appearance. And he picks David as his anointed king. And then he sends David to battle the Philistine army. And he does that through Goliath. I loved that last week. And it was planned months and months ahead of time. But I still love the irony of us doing David and Goliath last Sunday. I think that's beautiful. By the way, total side note. We had a great, great time with Terry Francona here last week. And I have always thought that I had some personal responsibility in the curse. And so what I realized is, last Sunday night, we planned out the Terry Francona event. Terry Francona came. I got to meet him personally. He was the manager who personally broke the curse in Boston of the Bambino. I met him, and then the Cavs win the championship. I think that's pretty clear logic, okay? So David battles Goliath, right? And what he does is he represents all of Israel, just as Goliath stands as a representation for the Philistine army. And David says, I'm going forth not in my own strength, not in my own cleverness, not in my own ability as a warrior. I am going forth as a representative of God and in his strength. And we know the rest of the story. The giant is defeated. The Philistine army is wiped out. And David begins to gather the praise and the admiration of the people of Israel. And that's where we pick up in 1 Samuel 18. In verse 6, it says, as they were coming home, when David returned from striking down the Philistine, or the Philistine, the women came out of all the cities of Israel, singing and dancing to meet Saul with tambourines, with songs of joy, and with musical instruments. And the women sang to one another as they celebrated. This is a celebration parade, right? That's what's happening here. And here's what they sing to one another. Saul has struck down his thousands. Now, if you just stop there, that's a pretty great parade. Saul has the power to reign and strike down thousands. But it's the second verse that becomes troublesome. It says, and David his 10,000s. And instead of Saul responding, wow, David, they love us. We are victorious over the Philistine army. Verse 8 says, Saul was very angry. And this saying displeased him. He said, they have ascribed to David 10,000s, and to me they have ascribed thousands, and what more can he have but the kingdom? And Saul eyed David from that day on. Now, I want to go on in just a minute, but I want you to realize for a minute what's going on here. David is chosen by God. Saul is told that David is chosen. So Saul begins to have a decision to make. Can Saul trust God and allow God to take this servant and elevate him above Saul? Or is he going to fight? And the answer is, as we go on, the next day a harmful spirit from God rushed upon Saul, and he raved within his house while David was playing the lyre, as he did day by day. Saul had a spear in his hand, and Saul hurled the spear, for he thought, I will pin David to the wall. But David evaded him twice. So the beginning of the unraveling of Saul's spiritual life right in front of us is that Saul looks and says, I want what he has. In fact, Saul says, I find my identity in being the king of Israel. I must hang on to this. I must hold it tight. It is everything that I am. And what begins to creep in is jealousy and envy and rage. And now, the one part of the story a lot of people don't know about David is now David goes from the victor over Goliath to the enemy of the state. I had probably about 15 years ago. I was working in a position at CCC that we called the director of ministries, and pretty much everybody except Pastor Joe reported to me. And at one point, Joe came to me and he said, "I think I want to go a different direction with how we're leading the staff." And he brought in a guy named Dave Brandolini. And the next thing I knew, I was demoted. And I knew right away the question was going to be, how am I going to handle this? And the way I handled it is in the godly, righteous way that you would expect that I did. I went into Dave's office, because I was told, you'll now report to Dave, and everybody else will report to Dave. And so I went in, and I said to Dave, I just want to let you know, the more you try to manage me, the less manageable I will become. If I was managing me, I would have fired me right there. But what I did was it's exactly what Saul did. Up to that point, I had somehow created in my mind that Mark has slain his thousands. And then all of a sudden, Dave comes in, and Dave has slain his tens of thousands. And my identity is gone, and I begin to get envious and jealous. And in that, I begin to communicate subtly or blatantly to God, you don't know what you're doing. Oh, sure, you knew what you were doing when I was in charge. But now that you've made this action in my life, you no longer know what you're doing. So now my contentment is going to rest on what I can do. And that's what we see in the life of Saul. And you got to read. If you haven't read 1 Samuel, 2 Samuel, you got to read it. I know Old Testament is hard to read, but as you're coming along, you're going to find things like this, and you're going to go, how did I miss this? So what happens is, back up just a second, Saul's son, Jonathan, and David become soulmates. They are knit together as friends in purpose and in how they care for one another. And so Jonathan, in chapter 19, goes to his own dad, and listen to what he says. He says in verse 2, Jonathan told David, Saul my father seeks to kill you. Therefore, be on your guard in the morning. Stay in a secret place and hide yourself. And I will go out and stand beside my father in the field where you are, and I will speak to my father about you. And if I learn anything, I will tell you. And Jonathan spoke well of David to his father and said to him, let not the king sin against his servant David, because he has not sinned against you, and because his deeds have brought good to you. For he took his life in his hand and struck down the Philistine, and the Lord worked a great salvation for all Israel. You saw it and rejoiced. Why then will you sin against innocent blood by killing David without cause? When I read this, as I read through this, I was reminded that the role that Jonathan plays in Saul's life, so Saul is spiraling down, Saul is recognizing that his glory days may be gone, and he's scrapping and clawing to try to regain some credibility. In fact, it turns to rage and ultimately his desire to murder David. So his heart goes so black that he decides the way I'll take care of this is to murder David. And Jonathan comes to him and he says, what are you doing? Do you not realize, do you not remember? This is the guy who absolutely sacrificed his life in front of a giant when you thought all hope was gone for Israel, and this guy went out and fought for you. He has brought you nothing but joy, and look where your heart is. And as Pastor Joe often tells us, after we've looked at the them, what's going on with them, in this case Saul and Jonathan and David, it's really easy to look at us and say, that kind of situation, does that exist in our lives? Do you have, when you go off the rails, do you have anyone in your life that will come and speak truth and perspective, like Jonathan did, to point out to you, this is a bad place. You're not in a good place. You're not thinking right. You're not thinking well. I love what Pastor Mark said earlier about the reason we gather in community. It's because in isolation, we go off the rails and nobody's there. What we try to do it simple ways in the church here. We encourage small groups. We have an ABF, Adult Bible Fellowship, that meets first hour, where you can go out of the crowd and become more of a size, part of a size group where people know you and know a little bit about you. Women, we have women's Bible studies. Men, we have Christian Leadership Concepts, CLC groups. And those are all designed to get you the opportunity for relationships where people can speak in your life. Now, you might say, Mark, that's horrifying to me. The whole idea of sitting down with somebody I hardly know and to start talking about where my life is off the rails, that's horrifying. Well, it's not the first meeting, okay? I'm not saying that you go there and when they say, okay, everybody write your worst sin down and then read it out loud to everybody, okay? That's general. And by the way, if that's what happens at that meeting, you need to come right to me. Don't go to a second meeting. Come right to me and say, because you have to have a chance to build relationship. You have to have a chance to gain trust. But you got to have somebody like this in your life. And unfortunately for Saul, in his life, he chose to ignore the godly perspective that Jonathan brought to him. And as you will keep reading, what happens in David's life is David is fleeing now from Saul. He is wanted number one, the enemy of the state. And there are several instances, but I'm just going to read you one. And I want you to see how, as we turn to David, to see how he responds. What does he do when things get bad and turn bad? And part of where we see that is in 1 Samuel 24. It says, and he came to the sheep's folds by the way where there was a cave, and Saul went in to relieve himself. Now David and his men were sitting in the innermost parts of the cave. So here's what's happening. David and his men are fleeing. Saul and his men are pursuing. David and his men hide in a cave. Saul needs a biological break, and he decides to go into this particular cave to relieve himself. And the men of David said to him, David, here is the day of which the Lord said to you, behold, I will give your enemy into your hand, and you shall do to him as it shall seem good to you. Then David arose and stealthily cut off a corner of Saul's robe. And afterward, David's heart struck him because he had cut off a corner of Saul's robe. He said to his men, the Lord forbid that I should do this thing to my Lord, the Lord's anointed, to put out my hand against him, seeing he is the Lord's anointed. So David persuaded his men with these words and did not permit them to attack Saul. And Saul rose up and left the cave and went on his way. Afterward, David also arose and went out of the cave and called after Saul, my lord the king. And when Saul looked behind him, David bowed with his face to the earth and paid homage. And David said to Saul, why do you listen to the words of men who say, behold, David seeks your harm? Behold, this day your eyes have seen how the Lord gave you today into my hand in the cave. And some told me to kill you, but I spared you. I said, I will not put out my hand against the Lord, for he is the Lord's anointed. See, my father, see the corner of your robe in my hand. For by the fact that I cut off the corner of your robe and did not kill you, you may know and see that there is no wrong or treason. I have not sinned against you, though you hunt my life to take it. So what David does in response to being hunted down and being chased and being an enemy of the state is he responds in grace and in kindness. He literally sneaks up on Saul, cuts off part of his robe so that Saul realizes that his life was in danger, that David, in fact, extended grace to him and spared his life. And I love that David even feels guilty that he cut off the corner of his robe. That's how much David desires to act righteously, even though Saul has chosen to act unrighteously. That's the hardest thing for us. When Dave Brandolini started to manage me, the thing that I noticed about him was that he responded to my jealousy and my envy by saying, "Mark, you can act however you want. I'm just here to make you successful." And he acted just like that. But some of you heard me say this before. By the time Dave left Christ Community Chapel, he was one of my closest friends. And it was all on him. It was all on him. Because what he had done was he recognized the spiritual cancer in my life, and he said, the way I'm going to win this guy over is not to get him fired. The way I'm going to win this guy over is to respond in kindness, to respond to evil with good, and to show him that what I care about is in his best interest. And that's exactly what he did, and he lived this out in front of me. And what it did was, as it says in Romans, it says in Romans 12, what we do by doing that, by responding that way, is we heap burning coals on people's heads. It's a funny picture, but what it means is we begin to cause them to think, man, maybe I'm not as great as I think. Maybe what they are doing, and their conscience begins to move in them and say, maybe I got some stuff wrong, and I need to act differently. Is there anybody in your life like that? I mean, sure, the idea, the teaching of Jesus to love your enemies, to do good to those who persecute you, it sounds great, but you got to bring it to reality. Who are the people in your life that in fact you have envy and jealousy and anger toward? And how can you begin to move from reacting in anger to acting in love? And you know the first answer is prayer. It's not the only answer, it's the first answer though, because what's about to happen is something that is supernatural. In your strength, you will continue to act in jealousy and envy and discontent. But what you and I need to do is we need to move supernaturally, begin first by praying, recognize the situation, take it right before God and say, God, it seems like you've brought this to my attention. It seems like this is the situation you want me to work on. And I had somebody come to me after first hour and said, I know two people I work with, and tomorrow instead of bringing strife to the office, I'm bringing bagels. And I'm looking forward to those bagels showing up. No. But I thought, how wonderful is that? Because right away they're going, recognition, right to the action that God creates for them. The perfect picture, though, because we know where David's life didn't stay on the rails, and we'll know more about that in the upcoming weeks. But what I want you to picture and think, and where Dave Brandolini was a great example to me of humility and being a servant leader, how can we do anything but be directed to Jesus, right? When you think about how Jesus, he deserved to be in the place of glory. He is the King. And what he decided to do, Philippians tells us, was to humble himself to the point that he would come to earth in flesh, that he would face all the scoffing, all the mockery, all the disbelief, all the pain. And instead of being jealous of those in power, he would give everything, including his lifeblood, to make sure that you and I have the opportunity to be saved. He took the exact, instead of trying to hold on to power like Saul did, Jesus said, I'm going to let go of all my power. And what he did was rescue all of us in that. And so we worship him because he's worthy of it. I hope that you know. I hope you have come to a place where you have decided to place your faith right square on Jesus. That any attempt you have to try to earn God's favor, to try to create your own salvation, you've abandoned that and said, the opportunity for me to be saved is in Jesus Christ, and I believe in his life, I believe in his death, and I believe in his resurrection. And because of that, I have hope. I hope that describes you. If it doesn't, talk to me, talk to Mark Walls, talk to somebody here that you know knows about that, and let us help you take the next step in believing. Father, thank you for giving us your word, and thank you for, by your Spirit, opening up our hearts and our minds and helping us to see how much we can relate to the struggles of Saul and of David, and thank you for ultimately bringing us a king, the real king, whose kingdom will endure forever. And Father, we praise you for your great salvation. I pray that if there's anybody here who has not come to faith, that they would just take a step closer today. That you, by your goodness, would open up our eyes a little more to be able to see and believe and help our unbelief. We ask because of Jesus and in his name. Amen.